Seems not all that long ago that healthcare reform not only seemed possible, but probable. But the future of healthcare reform remains unsettled. And joining us now to talk about it is Eleanor Clift of Newsweek magazine and the keynote speaker for the April 13th annual dinner at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Eleanor, is this simply a case of deja vu all over again from the efforts made by President Clinton back in the 1990s?
When President Obama first launched his effort, I was marveling at how he had not made the same mistakes as the Clintons, that he was leaving it up to Congress to write a bill because the Clintons had drafted a bill in the White House and all the lords and the manor on Capitol Hill didn't have a stake in it. And the Clintons never even got a vote in a committee because the chairman then of the Senate Finance Committee, powerful committee, Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, would hold the Clinton bill aloft. I think it was 1,364 pages or something, and he would let it drop to the ground with a loud thud to let people know exactly what he thought of it. So I thought it was really smart to have the Congress take the lead. Well, I've learned, as the Obama White House has learned, that the opposite of an era, it can be another era, and I think that this president yielded too much control to the Congress. But I think he seems persuaded that there is a way forward, and I think the future of healthcare is unsettled, but there's still a possibility that this president may get major legislation.
Back in the Clinton era, we didn't have a 24-hour news cycle or blogs or internet to the extent we have today. Consequently, much of the backroom dealing to pass healthcare reform has been on full display. Has that created a backlash that was unexpected?
Yes, I mean, that is how Congress operates. And I think here the analogy might be more with Lyndon Johnson, who President Johnson was a Senate Majority Leader. And when he became president, he was a master at persuading lawmakers to work his will. Most of the deal-making then was not exposed, certainly not contemporaneously, the way it is today. And so this president looks as though he has allowed this backroom deal-making to proceed as though it's a departure from the way things have always happened. In fact, it's how you get votes, and giving away, if you will, you know, bridges, hopefully not to nowhere, but infrastructure projects, making the special deals is how you win votes. And in the Senate in particular, when each vote is so crucial, the senators basically, it was almost like extortion before they would vote for the bill. And the irony is that Senator Ben Nelson of Nebraska, who got what is commonly referred to as the Cornhusker kickback, that so blew up in his face that he is now asking for it to be removed. And Senator Nelson, whose poll ratings were very high in the state, he's now hurting. The voters have really recoiled from what they've seen.
At the Center for Practical Bioethics, we seek ways to find common ground on difficult issues. It seems there's at least some common ground on healthcare reform. Is it because this is playing out in a political arena that we have not yet achieved reform?
Democrats suspect that whatever concessions they make to Republicans, that the Republican Party has made a decision that they're going to oppose President Obama's legislation, because if he were to succeed with such a major overhaul of the healthcare system, that the legislation could gain the status of the passage of Medicare or Social Security, and could give the Democrats a permanent governing majority, permanent in today's world of, you know, maybe a decade. So I think there's a lot of politics in the decision of the Republicans to oppose the legislation. And I think the president, for his part, I think he would be willing to go further when it comes to tort reform and expanded competition across state lines and some of the goals that the Republicans have. But they're not apparently willing to give him a vote in exchange for those concessions. And so then the president finds resistance on the part of his liberal base. Why concede to the Republicans if you're not going to get anything in return? When Senator DeMint early on said of health care that this is going to be President Obama's Waterloo, I think that really framed the debate and added to the Democrats' suspicion as to whether the Republicans ever had any intention of voting for health care reform.
We viewed a low point of this debate when it turned on the phrase death panels. We viewed that as outrageous on this end, but it did seem to have some traction nonetheless.
Sarah Palin popularized on her Facebook page, and it caught on, and it was based on a provision in the House version of the legislation that would reimburse physicians who counseled Medicare patients about end-of-life choices. And apparently under the current system, they're not reimbursed for having that sort of consultation. And so the debate around it based on the intent of the government and the intent of doctors, and I on the McLaughlin group, where I often debate Pat Buchanan, he would paint a picture of, you know, an 80-year-old woman, she's at home, and somebody from the government comes and talks to her about different ways she might want to die. That was how it was caricatured, and it became a powerful weapon against health care reform because of the sort of innate suspicion of government in the country. A suspicion that government wants to get rid of older people. I think just the general nervousness about talking about end-of-life choices. And so it became a very inflammatory discussion, and it really erupted at the town meetings around the country last August. And I think you're right, that was the low point, and it forced the president really to come back and give a joint address to Congress, which is a major event, and just to try to revive the bill, because I think it really was on the verge of dying at that point.
If health care reform doesn't pass this year, with large Democratic majorities in the House and Senate, a Democratic president, and after you've observed two strong efforts to pass health care reform, what in your mind will it take for this problem to be addressed in the political arena?
Well, I'm not giving up on it yet. I think if it fails, and I think the prospects right now are not certain, except I think the president is making the case to the Democrats that passing an imperfect bill is better than passing no bill at all, not only for the country, but for their reelection prospects. But should it fail, I think this president would try to come up with some sort of small measures so it would look like we are making progress in health care reform. The difficulty is, as you and I'm sure people listening to this podcast know, is that it's very difficult to say, tell insurance companies you've got to reform your practices if you don't have a way to give them a lot of new customers to spread out their costs, because otherwise they'll simply raise premiums, that all of the parts of healthcare reform are interconnected. But I think they would look for some baby steps, some incremental reform to move forward.
We're talking on March 1st, 2010. You're delivering a keynote speech to the Center for Practical Bioethics on April the 13th. What will be your takeaway message then?
In Washington, they always set deadlines, and people are saying, we're still talking about this health care reform bill by Easter, it will be dead. Well, you can never go wrong predicting Congress will take longer than anticipated. So I think my message will be, if you want health care reform, keep pressing ahead, be out there, and be as aggressive in your advocacy for health care reform as the opponents have been in their opposition, because I think a lot of this is about the way the arguments have been framed and where the political energy is. Right now, the political energy is with the Tea Party movement. And where are all those Obama-cons that seem to be ready to remake the world just a little over a year ago? I guess that's my question.
Eleanor Clift is with Newsweek Magazine and the McLaughlin Group on PBS. She will be the keynote speaker at the Center for Practical Bioethics annual dinner on April the 13th. For more information, visit practicalbioethics.org. That's practicalbioethics.org. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.